Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
With me now in studio is Adele Coffey. Hello. Good afternoon. Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you.
So something slightly different.
palate cleanser.
A little palate cleanser because Gen Z, I always work out what age are they, flooding TikTok with Carrie Bradshaw montages and clips about how, I hate this word, relatable, that she is. But it would appear that another generation have fallen under the spell of Sex and the City. That was our generation's show.
It was actually, and I still remember when I first came across it, I was in my early 20s, I was in my first job. And I have this memory that it came to Ireland later than its beginning point, which was 1998. So maybe it was, again, we forget that this is pre-Netflix, pre-streaming, when programmes came to Irish TV a little bit later. But in my memory, I would have come to it around 2000 when I was working my first job as a journalist, not able to afford nice shoes.
Journalist going, how can she afford that apartment?
I know.
How can she afford those clothes?
It was such an escapist kind of ideal for a young female journalist. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. I came across it. It would have been the early 2000s. And it was just an incredible
But here we are, a TV show that's almost 30 years old and the spin-off, and just like that, returning for a third season next month. To paraphrase Carrie, you might say, you can't help but wonder, will we ever be over Sex in the City? It was kind of one of those iconic moments, though, a bit like, you know, The Sopranos and others. It changed TV.
It did. Yeah. And it's easy to forget why, because everything has changed so much since that time. Mm. But in 1998, there hadn't really been a programme like this, if you discount The Golden Girls, which did talk about sex and was a group of female friends. But this was so modern. It was so contemporary. She was so fashionable. It was so liberated in many ways.
Provocative.
We hadn't seen women's sexuality so foregrounded before this. We hadn't seen such a sexually liberated character as Samantha before this. And I know
we mightn't pay much attention to that now, but at the time,
yeah, it was revolutionary.
It was explored, written by two gay men, but still the themes that exploring women and their identity and sexuality was groundbreaking.
It was, and I think, you know, the fact that it was initially written by gay men, and there was this comment that, oh, it was written with gay men in mind, but actually just pasted these characters of women on top of it. Whether that was the case or not, it doesn't really matter, because what happened was women saw themselves in those characters, and maybe for the first time women had been written in that complicated way, in a way that suggested we could be just like men, or we could have sex just like men, or we could, you know, there's a famous little scene that Samantha does where this guy she's been sleeping with, he's been cheating on his wife, and he calls her and he says, Samantha, I've done it, I've left my wife. And she says, who is this? And it's so funny, but it's feeding into that thing that, you know, we could actually be as morally ambiguous as we've always been taught men were about sex. And it was wonderful to see ourselves reflected back at us like that. Now, I'm not saying like I was living a life like any of these characters, but it was aspirational.
Yeah. I'm the opposite of an early adopter. I usually get to things at the very, very end, nearly when they're coming back. Were you an early fan? Like, were you kind of straight in?
Yeah. Well, I was in, I don't remember watching it in college, which is where I would have been when it started. But I do remember watching it in the Sunday Tribune, and I remember us talking about episodes every week. So early adopter in that sense, and definitely was well into it by season 3 and 4.
It was water cooler stuff.
It was absolutely. And, you know, there were moments, there were scenes I remember laughing about. I remember where I was, like there's a scene, I think it's season 3 or 4, where Samantha starts dating that absolute just toxic character, Richard, who owns the hotels, and he buys her a pearl thong, and she's absolutely convinced that he's cheating on her, and she wants to catch him cheating, so she misses the elevator, so she decides she's going to run up 20 flights of stairs, and she's wearing the pearl thong, and the physical comedy that they get out of that scene. And that's another thing we forget about Sex and the City.
It was really
so funny. And of course, that came on the back of the idea that women can't be funny.
Was it, you know, was it though, or did it change? But at the beginning, people might have thought, well, yeah, it's a show about liberating women and what they're doing. But actually, this is all about framing their relationship with men.
Yeah, it was all about framing their relationship with themselves, with each other as well. Mm. Because, you know, there's a line at some point where, and it's quite late on, maybe season four or something like that, where somebody says, oh, maybe our soulmates are each other. And again, you know, you had a series like Friends where it was like your friends are your family. In this, it was this suggestion that your female friends could actually be your soulmate and you didn't actually have to find that romantic partner, the one.
Yeah, because that's what I think that maybe is how it evolved. I think for me in the beginning, it sort of felt that it was all about their relationships with men.
With
but
Big,
actually,
particularly.
Over, yeah, completely. But this is no doubt a colossal cultural touchstone for a lot of people, not least Adele Coffey sitting before me. But there has this been the sort of this feeling that, like Tony Soprano, Don Draper, the Carrie Bradshaw is sort of an anti-hero. There's been a bit of a
she's a more than an anti-hero,
like against her. People
love her or hate her, and actually, I think you can do both because I hate watched so many episodes of Sex and the City, and I'm
you'd
a huge
never
fan.
Know Adele.
No, I'm a huge fan of the series, but there's so many episodes where you'd be so exasperated with Carrie because she's very irritating. She's very spoiled. She's very brattish. Like there's an episode that everybody will know where she thinks she thinks Charlotte should sell her old engagement ring to fund her buying her apartment. And it was really one of the most divisive episodes because she's so entitled. She thinks, well, why would you not sell your engagement ring? And
she was sort of accused of being a capitalist Barbie and that it was all about that. But also,
She's allowed to be flawed, and I think that's why we love her, is because, you know, Don Draper's allowed to be flawed, Tony Soprano's allowed to be flawed, and I really identify with both of those male characters. And I think the fact is that we were for the first time seeing flawed female characters. So many of us have so many aspects of Carrie Bradshaw and all of those female characters, but we just hadn't seen those flaws really forced to the limit like that before.
And kind of Sex and the City sort of Saipan divide was, you know, her obsession with Mr. Big. You know, I think that prompted more discussions about, you know, was she completely over the top? Was she, you know,
and
obsessed?
And it was so toxic as well as, you know, to use that overused term. But
well, I actually think that looking back now at her relationship with Mr. Big, I suppose after the Me Too, after everything, and now that we've different terminology actually to apply to, you look at that relationship in a slightly different way now.
Yeah, and there's also, you know, there's lots of cuts on TikTok of the relationship from Big's point of view and how Carrie was almost a stalker and there's
turning up in the beret.
There's some really funny memes about it, but I don't know. I think the reason why the show has lasted so long and why it's finding a new audience with new generations is because not much changes, I think, in the arena of love and in the arena of romance and in trying to find love. I think the concerns of 20-somethings and 30-somethings, particularly women who are going through that stage of their life, the concerns remain the same. It is often simply to find a partner and to find someone to be with. And I really do think that's why the show has stayed. But also, I think there's a huge gap in the market. Think of what we've had since Sex and the City. We've had Girls and we've had the brilliant show Insecure by Issa Rae, which has kind of flown under the radar. But that is it. You know, there is clearly a huge hungry audience amongst women for TV that reflects our lives. And for some reason, it's not being made.
And is that why you think that Gen Z are sort of discovering the show with such relish, because they see a relevance to it, even if the fashions have changed and the modes of communication have changed?
Yeah, I think they see themselves. Like I said, there are certain things that just don't change from generation to generation. Our interest in love doesn't change.
So why are the TikTok generation, why are they embracing Carrie? Do you think they're more forgiving of her? Because there was, yes, these were flawed women in all of their different ways, but there was still, a sense of, we judged flawed male characters and flawed female characters in a different way. So maybe after going through her anti-hero phase, is this new generation sort of embracing Carrie in a different way?
I think what it is, and this is just my pop psychology theory, but I think what it is that she is a flawed character and for Gen Z, there aren't that many flawed characters. Like, body image is so incredibly narrow now. Beauty, the beauty ideal is so incredibly narrow. Look at those four characters. Even look at Carrie Bradshaw, who is clearly played by a beautiful actress, but she is not traditionally beautiful in the way that, say, someone like, I don't know, name a Gen Z actor might be. And the same with Miranda and Charlotte and Samantha. They're all unique. They're all representing different beauty
ideals.
And even
someone like Samantha, so ahead of her time. Like, that was such a sort of a shocking sort of portrayal at the time. The And Just Like That, which is what, third season now.
It's coming out at the end of May, actually, the third season.
Yes.
Can't
so
wait.
Does it tarnish or complement the original show's reputation? Do you love And Just Like That?
Do you know what? I think it's representative of how desperate women my age and younger are for these kind of particularly female interests to be shown on screen, that I actually love And Just Like That. Even though I know script-wise, quality-wise, the painful wokeism of it. I don't know. It feels like we're being ignored as like 51% of the population, but I don't want to get off my high horse about that. It's still early in the morning. But yeah, I do think that it's just, it appeals to a particularly female interest. So you've got all the beautiful fashion. It's very escapist. You've got romance and it's funny. It's mostly well-written. And Just Like That is maybe not as well-written as Sex and the City. But the thing is, we're so invested in these characters. They're iconic characters and they last
for that
reason.
You kind of wonder what the perimenopause, menopause version of Sex and the City would look like. Do you think there is anything in your view that can replace it, or does it take its place in that icon of just, you know, privileged TV, the likes of which we'll never see again,
well,
etc.
I think it's of its time. Its success is of its time as well, because if you think about it, it didn't have to compete in the way that TV programmes now have to compete. I do think that Insecure, which was made by the American actress Issa Rae, is brilliant. And that came out on, I think it was HBO as well, but it hasn't achieved the same success. But I think it's because in a streaming landscape, there's so much noise and competition. Sex and the City landed in and was this huge explosion. It was so different. It was unlike anything else.
I can see a potential new writing project for you, Adele Cooper, to go off and write some fantastic intelligent script that would fill that gap. But for now, Adele Coffey, thank you for joining
us
today. And we will take a quick break.